Hey guys, are you looking for a sports book that you can trust? Well, look no further than mybookie.ag, where you can get a 50% match on your initial deposit of up to $1,000 when you use promo code DFSArmy. As a bonus, when you use promo code DFSArmy, you also get a free month of DFSArmy VIP and DFSArmy Beat the Bookie membership. That's a $100 combined value. So we'll help you with your daily fantasy sports, and we'll help you with your handicapping free when you sign up for mybookie.ag using promo code DFSArmy.
In 2015, an elite DFS Army commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Joe into DFS pro.
Kevin Allen here, a.k.a. the Fantasy Football Geek, and we are back with the DFS Army Bold Calls Fantasy Football Podcast, second one of the season, of the 2019 season. I've got my partner in crime, Season Long Says, on the line. What's going on, man?
Hello. What's up, my man? Glad to be back doing it again, getting into the heart of best ball season. I thought it definitely was appropriate we give the listeners another one as we head into exactly the halfway point of the off season. There's exactly 107 days, I read, until kickoff, and there's been exactly 107 days since the Super Bowl. So the time feels right.
Leave it to Season Long Says to consider May 26th as the heart of best ball drafting season. But, you know, I've got to say, I'm starting to get that tingle. Got to get the mindset for fantasy football, for season long, for drafts and all that. And there's no better way to do it, really, than these best ball leagues, which are awesome. I do them. You do more. I guess you're being in Florida. I don't know if draft is available there. I certainly know.
No, it's available. Draft's available. I do everything. I do draft. I do best ball 10s, formerly known as MFL 10. And two nights ago, I did my first NFFC. It's on playfnfc.com. They have a great 30-round best ball maniac draft where you're going super deep. So I do all three platforms.
You do have to be a maniac to want to draft 30 rounds deep. Now, I will say for me, I play all of mine on the draft app. We have a link on dfsarmy.com where you can sign up for that and get a free month of DFS Army VIP membership. But the reason I do it, it's just really convenient, man. It buzzes my phone like... So, you know, in prep for this a couple days ago, I just entered, and I'm starting small, and I advise everybody listening, start small. These leagues start like they're dollar ones. I mean, it's better than doing a mock draft. At least there's something on the line. And I start small with my first few because I want to get a sense of how the draft goes. And that's a lot of what I want to talk about today. Really some of the strategies for best ball, first and foremost. And then some areas where we need to target certain players, certain positions, how many of each position we really want to get in order to win these leagues. But I like the draft app just because it buzzes my phone when my pick is up, and that just makes my life easy.
It's very convenient. I just try to do them all just to get a sense of overall ADP. And, you know, it's whatever your preferences are. But, like, you said the dollar, $3 drafts that go fast on drafts, you can't beat it. Once you get into the best balls, you're looking at a minimum of $10. And certainly I think it's about 25 is the minimum on the NFFC. So,
yeah, I mean, $25, like I said, I want to build my way up to that. You want to get that practice going. Just see how those teams come together, because once you do a few of these and you've done a bunch of these, so I'm going to ask you, like, you start to realize, oh shit, like after round five, there's no viable running backs left. And if you didn't take anyone, you're screwed. And you know, there's a few situations like that will pop up. So we'll try to get into, you know, some general strategies in this podcast, and we'll talk about some players and some approaches and where to kind of switch off and so on and so forth. But let's start at the top. So the basic approach that I've seen on most of these best ball leagues is to hammer the running backs early because they're gone really fast. Do you kind of agree with that approach? Are you going running back pretty much in most of yours? What's your approach been, or does it vary based on your draft position?
Well, I think as an overall philosophy, you have it right. You want to get at least two running backs in your first three rounds that have job security, not ones that are committee guys, because a lot of the committee players are available in the fourth, the sixth round. You just want to lock in those running backs. And with the best ball format, which most of your listeners know already, you don't have to pick the wide receivers week to week who are going to perform. And that's the hardest part about fantasy football. It's not that picking good wide receivers. It's picking ones that are going to perform on a specific week. So you could afford to have wide receiver volatility later in the draft because you don't have to choose. Running back volatility later in the draft is much more of a question mark. So I think optimal strategy is to try to secure two running backs in the first three rounds, but you don't want to punt value. Meaning, if you're sitting there at pick 12 and Odell Beckham and Julio Jones are on the board and the best running back is, say, Nick Chubb or Dalvin Cook, I personally will just take receiver and then look to put together a bunch of running backs a little bit later on. So I think generally you have it right.
I literally had that exact situation just come up in one of my best balls last night where I'm sitting there staring at, even Mixon was off the board. So it was like Cheeto Mack or, Nick Chubb or Odell Beckham Jr. And I'm like,
I'm
taking Odell.
Yeah, no, totally. And I don't think that's going to happen to a lot of listeners that pick anywhere at 10, 11, or 12. So just be on the lookout for that. Don't panic about the running backs. A couple things that we said in the last podcast have already come true in the last 4 weeks. You just mentioned Mixon. Mixon's a first-round pick. He was going late second, early third. We talked about why the hell isn't he, overall pick 10. He's there now. You have to take him at the 11, 12, 13, 14 pick or – forget about it. He's gone. And he probably belongs in that first round solidly. And I still think he'll be pick 7, pick 8, ahead of Le'Veon Bell.
I cannot get on board. Not on regular season long. I am just not on board for regular season long. But best ball, I can understand it.
Yeah. I mean, the news today is May 26. Jay Glazer, who's been known as one of the most accurate reporters in the NFL, reported today that it's not looking good for Todd Gurley's knee, man. You cannot take Todd Gurley in the first round of your draft. And honestly, I'm not taking him anywhere close to the second round. Maybe at the very end, but I would advise against it. It's looking bad.
It looked very sketchy last year, and they haven't given out any information. Yeah, I'm scared of shit of Todd Gurley right now.
I don't need any information. They did all the information you need was in their actions. Malcolm Brown, the backup running back, was signed to an offer sheet by the Detroit Lions. They matched it without hesitation. And then they traded up in the third round to get Darrell Henderson out of Memphis, who was number one or number two on a lot of pre-draft rookie boards for running back. I mean, what more do you need to see? What more do you need to hear about? I mean, Todd Gurley is not a first-round pick in fantasy for 2019.
It's the toughest thing. It really is to combine – and we're getting away from what we really need to talk about, but it's the toughest thing to combine the analysis of the player but also injuries and shit that we really don't know. So we're just speculating that in the case of some of these things, we're speculating. We're speculating that, we're not speculating in the sense that – we saw they didn't play this guy in the freaking Super Bowl. So it's like, well, why didn't they do that? But we're speculating, hey, is it still going to be messed up? And, it's a lot of danger added to the mix with that player. And when you tack on the fact that it's best ball and the worst thing that can happen to your team is injuries. If you could just avoid injuries in your best ball league, even if you have a mediocre draft, you're pretty much going to win the league because everybody gets hammered with injuries in these leagues.
Yeah, and I think that there's so many injuries in football that why do you want to start with one? You're going to end up with a couple. Hopefully you just avoid the major landmines. Why would you want to start your first round, your foundation of your team, with a player that's already injured?
All right, so let's just jump right into it, right? Let's get – because people love rankings and shit like that. So let's get right into it. You've got your top tier of running backs this season – going top four picks straight up. Barkley, Zeke, McCaffrey, and Kamara. 1, 2, 3, 4, every single time, every league you're in, there's really no those four are the top four, bar none, right?
And not in any order, because I've seen McCaffrey go one, I've seen Elliott go one, I've certainly seen
that's what I'm about to throw at you, right? So a lot of the consensus has Saquon Barkley at number one overall, but Barkley's part of a pretty shitty team, right? You've got Zeke Elliott, he's there kind of doing his thing, had a he's just a volume monster with that Dallas team that maybe looks to be a little bit better, I think, this year than last. McCaffrey, who was just a PPR monster every single game with or without Cam Newton last year. And Kamara, who no longer has the specter of Ingram taking away some of his carries. How are you ranking these four? Like, do you have a preference?
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about for best ball for season long.
Yeah, I don't think it matters. I mean, I think they're all.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. I think with the safest pick of the bunch is likely Elliott, because, like you mentioned, the volume is there. He caught more passes than he did in any of the previous years last year. He's a true three down back on a good team. That said, he may not have the most upside. I mean, you saw Barkley last year catch a ton of passes, and it doesn't really. He might be such a transcendent talent at this point that in year two, he might be the best actual running back in the NFL. It may not matter how bad the team is. And if they even improve a little bit, look out. So I probably on the clock would take Barkley one, but I don't really have a good argument why you wouldn't take Elliott or McCaffrey. And then, you know, Kamara, we never saw him get the high volume other than those four games Ingram missed. They did bring in Latavius Murray in New Orleans, who can be an effective goal line back and third down back.
I have to say,
they will use him. They will use him.
I'm someone who disagrees with, and you know, maybe it's wishful thinking, but I'm someone who disagrees with conventional wisdom that Lats Murray slides into the Ingram role and just gets those carries. I think he's not as good as Ingram.
And I don't think anyone would dispute that. But what if it's even like 65% of what Ingram had? What if Lat Murray comes in and gets 12 carries a game, including, let's say, 35 to 40% of the touchdown opportunities that would go to a running back? Again, I just think it doesn't change how you think about Alvin Kamara. I just think it's enough to put him fourth, especially, how many Saints games did you watch and they go to that asshole Taysom Hill on the goal line? So I just
100%. I agree. The other three guys, Kamara almost borderline doesn't belong in the same tier for that reason, because the other three guys have zero competition. The only thing that brings Kamara into that top tier is just, A, again, the loss of Ingram for me.
I was saying Kamara belongs in that tier, just at the bottom of it.
Yeah, so I totally agree with that. But I could see any of the top three change. Christian McCaffrey was a fucking beast last year. It's really hard to not love him in PPR leagues. I mean, he's so utilized, and it didn't hurt him when Newton was out and they were losing and they were terrible and it didn't matter. He was still putting up massive points. So, like, there was no point where they were pulling that guy out. All right, let's jump to the second tier, because, again,
just last thing about Christian McCaffrey. You know, everyone – people that were aggressive on him took him at the end of the first round last year. That's where he was going. Most likely in a lot of drafts he went in, like, the early second. But if you think he can't build on it, check out GQ just did an article on Christian McCaffrey. You got to look at his arms, his arm size. He did a total body transformation where he bulked up but kept his speed. He changed his diet. Google the GQ, and that picture of his arms went viral, man. He looks like he's in superhuman shape. I wouldn't be mad if somebody took him at a one overall. So
yeah, I'm telling you, I have a hard time actually really getting on board with Saquon Barkley at number one overall, because he's still on the fucking Giants and they suck. And I want my running backs on teams that win their games, ideally.
He catches so many passes.
I know. I know, but it's still the Giants. So we're splitting hairs here. I mean, it's literally like what I'm just splitting a hair. All right, let's jump to the second tier real quick, and then we'll talk about some of the middlings and where these guys are going. Tier two is pretty much still first rounders in best ball leagues. So you missed the first four. You're picking in the middle of the round. All right, so you've got a bunch of names staring at you. Melvin Gordon, I think, is pretty consensus the top of tier two. I have a hard time putting any one of these guys above him. So Melvin Gordon. Then you've got a group. You've got David Johnson, Terminator Connor. You've got Le'Veon Bell, Todd Gurley. I'd throw Joe Mixon in that group. So I'll tell you, for me, I think right after Gordon, I'd go Johnson, Connor, Bell, Mixon. But give me your breakdown of this next tier.
Yeah, David Johnson and Melvin Gordon are the clear next two running backs. I think after those two running backs go, that's when you start thinking, do I pivot to receiver? I'm worried about Le'Veon Bell a little bit. For those of you that follow the news daily, it came out that the head coach, Adam Gase, didn't really want Le'Veon Bell on the team. He actually preferred to go after Tevin Coleman.
What a fucking Jets, man. Worst fucking team. Hate being a fan of them. Continue.
That said, I mean, Adam Gase, it's bad that it got out, but he's actually probably right. You know, I mean,
Tevin Coleman's a Jag. You're comparing Tevin Coleman to Le'Veon Bell. What's wrong with Adam Gase? Who the hell is he?
He's happy to have him, I'm sure, but that just can't be good. And he doesn't really fit what Adam Gase likes to do with that outside zone. But Le'Veon Bell's a between the tackles runner. Now, that said, he's still Le'Veon Bell. He sat out a year. I'm just saying there's some added risk, and I think he deserves to be pushed down. And I would start thinking about Davante Adams, Hopkins there. But, yeah, that's certainly the next tier that you name. Gordon, David Johnson.
Well, so you've already said we don't like Gurley too much. Let's assume you're putting Bell at the end of this group behind James Conner and Joe Mixon. Now, is Gurley popping in anywhere here, or are we looking at now this next grouping, which it gets a little more sketchy? I think that
here you asked me about Gurley. These are the running backs that I'm taking ahead of Todd Gurley right now if I'm drafting. I'm taking Marlon Mack ahead of him. I'm taking Nick Chubb ahead of him. Definitely Dalvin Cook. Fournette, probably. The decision point for me is going to come where it's Devontae Freeman, Kerryon Johnson, Todd Gurley. So that puts him definitely out of the second round for me, Todd Gurley, right now. So I'm not getting him. Somebody else is going to like him way more than I do. He's off my draft board unless he falls to the third, which is just not happening.
Brutal. All right, let's talk about some of the later running back talent that you're going to be kind of looking at third, fourth round when you skip, if you kind of take in a little bit of contrarian or looking at as your third running back, possibly your fourth pick. You know, if you took too early, got a wide receiver, then you're thinking, I want a third one, right? So I'm going to talk about this group, and I'm not even sure some of these guys will last that long. I think, for example, like Damian Williams, probably doesn't last super long. Probably an end of the second rounder.
Yeah, that's where he's going on the 2-3 turn.
Not a lock to be a workhorse starter by any stretch of the imagination. So there's definite risk with the Damian Williams pick. We've got Sony Michel in that range. Aaron Jones.
What do you think about Aaron Jones? Are you confident in him? I've stayed away. I sold him at Dynasty League because not that I don't think he's good. It's just that, you know, he's often hurt. He, you know, Jamal Williams is just a guy, but he's not going away. And they drafted another guy. I don't know. For the third round, fourth round, I always like other players, but
Jones for me is a speculative play. So we're speculating it. Yeah, you have your sure things and you have your speculations, right? Jones is a speculation right now. He's probably he's going too high for where he should be because of
he's going on the 3-4 turn. Jamal Williams is going in the 12th round. Like, isn't that a gap too large?
I don't think between I want to specify what I see as a speculative play. What do we with Jones? We're speculating that hey, we've got a new coaching staff in place. You've got a team that is a high scoring offensive team. You've got a player who has talent. Been hurt a couple times, whatever. Has talent. So the speculation is, all right, they're going to realize that Aaron Jones is the best talented running back when he's healthy on this team, and they're going to give him 20 plus touches a game. If they do it, he will outplay his draft position. Like he should conceivably in that situation well outscore someone like Marlon Cheeto Mack, who is going ahead of him a little bit, but doesn't catch passes and is strictly yards and touchdowns type of a running back, right? He should outplay. But if they only give him 12 touches a game like they did for most of last season, he's going to fuck your lineup and will not deliver stud like, you know, basically Aaron Jones has RB1 potential if they play him. The speculation is, will they do it? I don't know. It's a new coaching staff. They haven't came out and said they're going to play him.
Think about the players that are going right around Aaron Jones. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. If you're ready to take a running back and Aaron Jones is on the board, and you could draft Josh Jacobs, the rookie, in a great situation, Philip Lindsay, Sony Michel, Derrick Henry, aren't you, or even Mark Ingram. I know he's a little bit older, but he's on the most run-heavy team. Aren't you going to take all those guys over Aaron Jones, or do you just have a different preference?
For me, Aaron Jones isn't one of the guys. Like, it's not a name that I'm drafting. But some of those other names I don't love either. I don't love Sony Michel. Too many other options on that team. I like him, but I don't like him where he's going. Damian Williams, again, I'm not 100% sure that he will be the guy for his team. Seems like he will. But
well, I said Derrick Henry. I mean, these are the players that you have to choose.
Or Chris Carson, Kerryon Johnson. How about Darius Geis? Who no one is talking about. You can get him much later.
Yeah, I don't understand. There was some resistance to Darius Geis. I mean, he started off as an early third round pick. He's now being pushed into the fifth round. I guess the narrative is that the team isn't going to be good. They re-signed Adrian Peterson. Chris Thompson's back healthy. Even though he sucks, Samaje Perine's still there.
I mean, no one can be worried about. I think the re-signing of Adrian Peterson is the concern for Geis. I mean, if you're asking me what possible – listen, Chris Thompson was always going to be there. We know what he does, but he also gets hurt a lot. But yes. The concern with Geis is, like, why are they bringing back Adrian Peterson? Like, if they got a young buck here, what the hell's going on? So that I think, is much more of the consideration here. And it's weird for me. I mean, you have some of that going on. There's a lot of situations that aren't fully vetted out yet. So it's going to be super interesting to see how some of the stuff comes together. But I think this whole group is sketchy. Like, even Chris Carson. What if they go to Rashad Penny? Like, his job is not secure.
That's on my list here. Chris Carson had offseason knee surgery. He's going in the fourth round. Rashad Penny is a seventh round pick. That is a gap too large, too. We're talking about, like, the gap between players. I mean, it's a little bit better, that gap, than the Aaron Jones, Jamal Williams. But Chris Carson, Rashad Penny, those guys should be going back-to-back. Chris Carson should not be a fourth-round pick. I know people like him. He's a good running back. But there's a lot of uncertainty there. Either that or you got to push Rashad Penny up. I've been taking Penny in the six. I've been jumping him. And even, like late six. But, yeah, you just said it. There's a lot of uncertainty there. And that's, again, the reason why you take early running backs.
That's what I'm saying. So getting back to best ball strategy versus the discussion of players, you waited the first couple rounds, right? You got cute. You loaded up on fucking super stud wide receivers because everybody was taking running backs. So you went contrarian, right? And you've got two great wide receivers, DeAndre Hopkins and Odell, on the same team. You're like, oh, fuck, I'm going to kick some ass in this league. And then like round three, and you're like, all right, now I need to get some running backs. And you're looking at names like some of these names. You've got Chris Carson and Kenyon Drake and Geis and Kerryon Johnson. And they seem fine, but it's like, and that's just in the third. And then you get to the fourth round, and now you're really diving deep for some prayers and some hopes. So that's the punishment. That's why you want to hammer two definitive, my role is secure, I'm definitely going to play for my team. I'm definitely, assuming I don't get hurt, and I'm going to be starting. And then you also want to be able to handcuff those guys so you've got this sort of layer of protection against a running back position if possible.
Yeah, I mean, you only have a finite number of slots in best ball, and you can't make any waiver wire additions. So in MFL 10, you only get 20 slots. And in draft 18, so handcuffing is very difficult to do. I mean, ideally, your roster construction wants to be for running backs. You 4, 5, maybe 6, but 4 or 5 is, I think, is optimal. I mean, you know, some people will go six, but you really need about seven or eight receivers. You'd need at least two QBs, at least two tight ends, and then a couple of defenses, and not in the draft app though. So you have to really pick and choose, and you're not going to be able to get handcuffs without costing your team something substantial.
All right, let's jump into some late round picks that you can get that might have some serious on the running back side that might have some serious best ball value. I'm going to throw a couple names out there, and I want you to give me an idea of where these guys are going, and if you're kind of like on board with them being pretty good late value. So you already mentioned Rashad Penny is a guy that you can grab like around the sixth round. I'm going to throw a couple names out there, and these are significant. Again, Josh Jacobs, where is he going? Oakland's rookie running back does not seem to have a lot of competition.
Yeah, Jacobs is routinely going in the early fourth round. Aggressive drafters are taking him at the end of the third. They're, as soon as Marlon Mack's off the board and Kerryon Johnson, sharp drafters are getting ahead and taking Jacobs. They're taking Jacobs now ahead of Philip Lindsay, Sony Michel, Geis now.
Wow.
In some drafts, he goes after them. It's just that the opportunity is there. He's the unquestioned starter, even though he doesn't have a lot of wear and tear in the tires. He didn't get a full workload at Alabama. He's a clean prospect. He may not be like the best prospect to come out. I think last year, if you lopped him in with last year's rookie class, I probably would have had him ranked in anywhere from like 4 to 7. But he has the opportunity in front of him, so I think that's he's appropriately priced.
And by the way, you know, whatever we rank a player, seeing him, his team picked him late in the first, early second round. They like him, so that's all that really matters. We care about opportunity, not talent in this type of situation. I care about opportunity. I'm not good enough to judge his talent. I just want to know and judge opportunity. So on that...
Do you want to know some other running backs that you can get a little bit later? Was that the original question? Is that where you're going?
Yeah, if I'm stuck without a running back and now it's round 5, 6, 7, who are some names that I'm able to jump over to that might really bring me some value?
Now, I'll just throw out the names, and then we can come back and discuss what, you know, any of them that you want. So players that you can get in the 5th, 6th, sometimes 7th round, rookie running back for Chicago, David Montgomery, looks pretty promising right out the gate. He can catch. He can run. He's fast. He's big. He's going to be in a good offense. So David Montgomery – great to have as your third running back, but you might end up having him as your two. I think that there's value to be had, sneaky value to be had, in the San Francisco running backs. I know people kind of forgot about Jerick McKinnon and they hate him because he got hurt last year, but he's there. They're paying him. He's going to have weeks. In best ball, you're not going to have to guess which weeks those are. So any of the San Fran running backs in the 6th, 7th round, Tevin Coleman, Jerick McKinnon, are live. Latavius Murray in the 7th round, I think his price is going to go up just because there'll be some opportunity there. And then the last one I'll throw out at you is we got to still keep an eye on our boy Hoyce Freeman. He's going in the 8th round. He's a second-year player, and they're going to use him. It didn't work out great for him last year, but if you like Rashad Penny, you're going to have to talk yourself into Royce Freeman in round 7-8 if you get stuck.
I'm going to throw a couple of names from our previous pod, or one name from our previous pod, a couple of late rounders that I'm looking at as well, and I like all of those picks. A couple of names that I'm looking at as well. Number one from our previous pod is Miles Sanders from the Eagles. I'm not sure how high he's now kind of going up.
He's a seventh round.
Yeah, I love that pick. I fucking love that pick late.
I could see him being a late 4th, early 5th by the time draft season comes around, especially if he breaks one in a preseason game. You know how that works.
Miles Sanders is like the best ball value of the fucking century right now.
That's why we do early best ball values. I mean, I looked back at a best ball I did before the draft. I got Josh Jacobs in round 10. Obviously, that would never happen now. You know, I mean, that's why we do them early.
Yeah, and that is where like you can get an edge and advantage by doing some of these early best balls, just sharpening up. There's another guy I really like a lot as a very interesting late round pick, and that's Judge Ito Smith from the Falcons, taking over the Tevin Coleman role. Because people who think Devonta Freeman is going to get a full workload are fooling themselves. That motherfucker never gets a full work share. They do not do that on Atlanta. Judge Ito is going to be a heavy part of that offense. How do I know? Because I played DFS last season, and that motherfucker was 3K every week when Tevin Coleman went down, and he was a value play, so I remember the name.
Yeah, Ito Smith is a really nice pick. You don't have, you could spend a double-digit pick on him. Don't even have to think
that's
about
what I'm talking about, like a super late pick that you can throw on your team. It's a guy that no one's talking about that's going to get run.
Yeah, that's definitely – and Devonta Freeman's done nothing to prove he could stay healthy over a long season. I know that the coaches there, they use a two-back system. They actually got rid of Steve Sarkisian. They brought back Dirk Cutter, even though he was a poor head coach. Dirk Cutter was really he was a prolific offensive coordinator. So I think he knows how to use the different parts of that machine. And somebody that I like that was last year's bum that has a real good chance in the double-digit rounds is we got to – look at Ronald Jones on Tampa Bay as well. I think it's the same situation as Ito Smith, where actually probably even a better situation because they didn't draft anybody. It's just him and Peyton Barber there still. It's going to be an improved offense with Bruce Arians as the head coach. So I like Ronald Jones if you can get him in a 10th round, which is mostly where he's available.
I like it. And I'll throw out one last one here, and then we'll move on to the wide receiver position and a little bit of detail there. But one last one I'll throw out there is Kalen Ballage from Miami as well. Not like something super exciting, but if I'm again 9th, 10th, 11th round, I'm trying to throw out some guys that I think will get playing time. I mean, he's still probably floating around, I would say, the 10th, 11th round, and a name that might get more run than people think, assuming that, again, Kenyon Drake will be a workhorse, is just an assumption and a speculation. There's absolutely no guarantee that happens.
You just said it. Everything's up for grabs there. There's a new coaching staff, and they don't have ties to either of these guys. The previous administration, they drafted Ballage, and a couple administrations ago, where it was they did Kenyon Drake. So it's everything's up for grabs there. This current front office drafted a rookie named Miles Gaskin in the later rounds. So you even got to look at him as someone late because this is their guy. Now, I'm sure one of these players, maybe two of them, will emerge as fantasy viable, but you just don't know. So I think that you're wise to advise on Kalen Ballage because if we redraft after week three, he might be a third-round pick.
Yeah,
I mean, it's unknown.
You want those upside long shots in that post-10th round. So – you know, that's what I'm going for after the 10th round, especially if I'm taking a running back. I'm trying to go for guys that have a chance of delivering points on a consistent basis. Everything in best ball leagues, in my opinion, is about consistent scoring. So you're going to get injuries. You're going to have this. You're going to have that. You need guys who are going to be involved. Like it's in the later rounds, the way you win these isn't by taking Christian McCaffrey over Zeke Elliott. They're both going to be fine. It's like that's not going to hurt. Be the thing that changes it. The thing that changes your team is the guy who accidentally drafted C.J. Anderson and then, you know, it was their last pick last year. And all of a sudden in the last, you know, 5-6 weeks, he's putting up beast numbers. And or Damian, you know, one of these surprises that come out of nowhere, get a ton of run and become all of a sudden a starter. And you got them in round 18 and round 15. That's how you win the league. So these late gems, unfortunately, are where leagues are won and lost. So let's jump. Go ahead.
But you just said that best ball is about having consistent performers.
It's actually
a little bit of the opposite.
I know. When it came out of my mouth, I actually didn't like the words that I said. It wasn't about consistent. It's about
– I know what you meant. I know what you meant.
Yeah. It's not about consistent. I need a guy who's going to put up – I need people who are playing and getting playing time regularly.
Right, or at least have a clear path to if that happens, if this plausible occurrence happens, then my guy is in play. Like, then my guy is live.
Absolutely.
So, I understood what you meant. But just to be clear for the listeners, that you don't have to predict when a specific player will go off. If they pop 3 to 5 times in the season, you're happy to have that guy as a 7th, 8th, 10th round pick.
100%. And again, best ball league, you're going to win this league not with your first 5 or 6 picks. You're going to win the league with your picks, you know, 6 through 17. So that's really where you need to concentrate. But it's more fun to talk about the top end of the draft. So let's jump over to wide receiver real quick. Obviously, running back is super key, but wide receiver, very, very important as well. And wide receiver is where we're going to be waiting a little bit a lot of the time in our best ball leagues for the most part while we're filling up our running back spots. A lot of that is because wide receiver is just a very volatile position. Even your super duper incredible studs are going to be more volatile than top line running backs that are always, always involved. So consensus number one, or let me throw out the top tier consensus for this season. And I'll tell you what I have, and I think there's a player or two that might sneak their way in or out of this consensus, but I've got it as Hopkins, Adams, Jones, Schuster, and Beckham, OBJ, as my tier one.
Yeah, Michael Thomas in tier one?
I do not personally include Michael Thomas as a tier one wide receiver.
Not even at the bottom of that tier? You have him as a clear second
tier? I see him as a tier two. I'm not 100% convinced, for example, that I like Michael Thomas more than, you know, Amari Cooper or Antonio Brown or Mike Evans. So
okay, that's definitely contrarian to what the market thinks, because I see Michael Thomas go in the first round sometimes. So I like that you have a different opinion, because I never find myself drafting Michael Thomas. I always kind of pass on him as well.
Yeah, I don't care what the you know what? I don't like to – I think the consensus is wrong a lot, and I don't like to let it affect me.
And by the way, not that I don't like him as a fantasy player. I love him, but
I like
he's always
too.
A guy like a better.
Michael Thomas and Adam Thielen is in this category too. But Michael Thomas started off really well last season. He got a ton of volume. But the problem with Michael Thomas is his volume is short volume, and so he's being treated like – you know, like a DeAndre Hopkins, like a super stud in some senses, like Davante Adams, a touchdown catcher.
By the way, who do you think, if you had, so this top tier, you think these are the best receivers. Who would you project to lead the NFL in targets for this year? Just targets. Who do you think is the most likely to get the most targets in the NFL?
That's a good question. I could see that being Davante Adams.
I mean, is he a big target guy? I guess he does. Yeah, no, you're right.
He gets a lot. And the reason I can see it him, again, I like to look at the competition, and Davante Adams really doesn't have quality other wide receivers around him that are going to command targets for the team. You know, there are other guys, and they'll get targets, but they don't have other wide receivers that will command targets. If I look at Odell Beckham, for example.
Odell's going to – Jarvis Landry's going to take a night. I mean, he's going to have a lot of targets, and he also misses a lot of games. Odell, you can't ever project him for 16 games. So I think whatever target volume you have to project at like 14 or 15 games.
Yeah, and that team spreads the ball around. They're not going to – if people are thinking Odell Beckham Jr. is going to get 14 targets, he's just not. That team doesn't operate in that method, or at least they didn't last year. I think Antonio Brown might be one of the most heavily targeted wide receivers in the league this coming year. Under the radar, because they don't have anyone else to throw to.
How about this? Would you say it's – I think that Juju Smith-Schuster
– Oh, I didn't even think of Juju. Yeah, Schuster.
Is, I mean, last year he had an incredible amount of targets. And now Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell won't be there. Obviously, Le'Veon wasn't there last year either. Just pure targets, I think Juju is the favorite to lead the league in targets. I think literally, you could project him for 170 targets.
My boy had 166 targets last year with Antonio Brown.
Right. So 175, which, you know, by the way, is insane. Because when you think about someone like a Mike Evans, who's still in the league.
Let me give you some numbers from last year, because this is actually very pertinent. Devontae Adams, 169 last year. Okay.
These are targets.
Targets total. DeAndre Hopkins.
In 16 games, right?
Yeah, these guys all played 16 games. DeAndre Hopkins, 163 targets last year. Okay? Julio Jones, 170 last year. Odell Beckham. Did he play the whole season? 124.
No.
Okay, he missed a few games. 124 last season. Irrelevant.
Right.
He's not a different team. Juju Smith-Schuster, 166. So these guys are all in similar boats. Let me tell you Michael Thomas's number. 147.
Right. Okay. Now, the reason why the lower number of targets doesn't matter for him is because the catch rate's higher.
Yes, Michael Thomas is catching 90%, 95% of the passes on his way. Like, actually, Michael Thomas may have had the most receptions. Let me just get the numbers. I love the numbers. 125 receptions. That is, an 80% catch rate? Whereas, on 160 targets, 115 receptions for Hopkins. And let's see what Juju did. He had, again, 166, 111 receptions. So you see that the target numbers are consistent between Hopkins, Adams, Jones, Schuster. Let's see what Antonio Brown did. Same 168, 104 receptions, so even lower. So,
but just what also the reason why Michael Thomas is catching more, it's the Stats Bros have a great statistic. You know, when I say Stats Bros, I mean that.
Yeah, average depth of target is much lower.
Right. And, correct. It's much lower. He's doing these short passes, which is fine. I mean, for fantasy, you're cool with that. But he's not going to need as many targets to get you to where you need to go. So he's still an elite option. That really was my point.
Yeah.
Even though it's not
a few less targets, I don't like his yardage totals. So there are some concerns straight up. That's my concern with Michael Thomas. Everything I'm doing is numbers. I'm trying not to base too much. I don't base too much on outside of the numbers. And when you look at the numbers with Michael Thomas, he's treated as an elite tier. He has an elite, the best probably catch rate. Although I think that has to come down a little bit. I don't know if you can maintain an 85% catch rate. But the problem is these are catch and run situations, and he needs to break one for a touchdown. He's not as likely to have a big game on a week to week basis as someone, let's say, like Davante Adams, who is always being targeted in the end zone. The team doesn't like to run that much. They don't really run around the goal line. Like Thomas said, they'll hand it off. They'll give it to Kamara. You know, there's other people who are studs on that team. Same thing with Hopkins. Like, they're not really giving Lamar Miller a lot of goal. You know, they're throwing it to Hopkins in the end zone. He's catching the tights. You know?
All right.
You know,
so we agree on, like, the elite tier and give and take of, you know, who's supposed to be in there, who's a tick below. But scroll your page down a little bit. Once we get into the deeper rounds, who are the listeners supposed to grab in their best ball and their season long leagues that
might, you have your midlings as well, and you have your you know, the second tier with Amari Cooper, Mike Evans, guys I like. I'm a little concerned about where I'm not actually fully sure of where some of these guys are going. So that's interesting for me. In terms of, like, late guys, I could definitely think of some, but I'm not sure if these guys are considered late. Like, Chris Godwin, where's he going at this point? Because I really like
Godwin. Godwin's going on the 3-4 turn right now.
All right, so he's – that. How about – so you're ready by 3-4, you've got that whole
– this is the grouping that he's in. He's in the Brandon Cooks, Kenny Galladay, Robert Woods grouping. He's right there with that.
Yeah, okay, so that's not shocking, actually. That's – Kenny Galladay, Julian Edelman should be in that area.
Yeah, I mean, okay. So I put out something on Twitter about a draft I did, and I asked what was the most shocking or surprising pick, and you commented appropriately so that you thought DJ Moore in the fourth round was going a little early. Fifth round, he's going a little early. And I mean, that's where he's going, and I like DJ Moore, but the thing where people forgot about Curtis Samuel. I mean, you can get that guy in the double-digit rounds. And I just think, again, talking about the space between two players that are similar, and I like DJ Moore, but Curtis Samuel in round 11 or 12,
guys, I'm on a pod.
I don't see that much difference between the two players. Do you agree with what I'm saying when you're talking about that tier of wide receiver?
I don't get the DJ Moore thing at all. I don't. I mean, when you're the area where DJ Moore is going is before Mike Williams. It's before Robbie Anderson, Marvin Jones Jr., some other names that I kind of like more than
Marvin
him.
Marvin Jones is going in round 9. I mean, Marvin Jones is 5 rounds later.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, DJ Moore's got Cam Newton throwing to him, one of the most inefficient quarterbacks in the entire National Football League, certainly the most inefficient quarterback with name recognition in the NFL. Like, when was the last time Cam Newton produced a wide receiver that was consistent and put up good numbers on a week-to-week basis? I'm going to tell you, it has never happened.
Well, I think that last year Cam clearly had a shoulder issue. All reports have been
his whole career. His whole career. He has never had a consistent.
But look what they did. Okay, so a couple years ago they drafted Kelvin Benjamin in the first round. The year after that they got Devin Funchess. They went twin towers, tried to throw it on the field. It didn't work for Cam for the exact reasons you said. So now look what they did in the last 2 years. 2 years ago they drafted Curtis Samuel, a quick twitch, fast, speedy running back slash wide receiver. DJ Moore, same profile, first round. So now they're going with this, what appears to be a short passing game with speed. DJ Moore is not a huge receiver, but he's quick as hell. He has one of these after the he's an elite after the catch option. So between Curtis Samuel, DJ Moore, and Christian McCaffrey, I think that they saw what you saw with Cam Newton, and they're now going to go with this short passing game. It worked for New England. New England Patriots have won Super Bowls with this short passing game, and I think that's what we're headed for with Carolina. So DJ Moore is probably appropriately priced. You're paying full price for him, but I'm just shocked that Curtis Samuel, I've said it a couple times already, is seven rounds later. So I just don't see a lot of difference between the two.
I'd just be pissed. If I'm looking at the group that DJ Moore is in with Sammy Watkins and Godwin and Cooper Kupp in that still available, and I just don't see myself taking him, Jarvis Landry. There's names in that range that I like a little bit more. So that's the way I'd go. But let's talk about some best ball names. Some guys who are inconsistent, but when they do their thing, they do it well, and they put up big numbers. So, you know, the ultimate kind of, in my mind, when I think about a best ball wide receiver, I'm going to throw out a name, Tyler Lockett. Okay? Not a volume guy. But basically, you got Russell Wilson's style. He tosses bombs. And this guy had 10 touchdowns last year on 70 targets.
Yeah, I mean, the which is unbelievable. It's probably an all-time record for the NFL as far as efficiency. And you always want to bet that it's going to regress a little bit. But I think the targets are going to go up. Now, the targets aren't going to become 120 all of a sudden, but they might be 85.
That team will never – they're so efficient. Russell Wilson's the most efficient quarterback in the league by far. Yeah.
And they had the least amount of pass attempts in the whole NFL. I think it was like 450-ish. Just to give you perspective, Pittsburgh threw 700 times or close to it last year. I mean, it's a huge, huge gap. I like Tyler Lockett. I think he's a little bit better than a boom or bust. You could project him probably for 80, 85 targets, but there's rookies there. They have David Moore, who I believe is in his second or third year, who's flashed a little bit last year. He's a great player. I wouldn't categorize him as boom or bust. I think you're going to see a little bit more consistency from him. Maybe not from a touchdown perspective like he did last year. He was just good almost every week. When you talk about ultimate basketball players, I always think about DeSean Jackson. Now, I know he's a little bit older now, but in his peak and, you know, so much now that he was a player that literally went three catches for 130 yards and a touchdown or got – one target, 7 yards. I mean, he is the ultimate best ball player. But if you wanted to bring it to what players are like that now, that's really
yeah. I mean, that's old school. I could say Mike Wallace used to be like that when he was with the Steelers. There's a few players that are certainly like that. They kill your fantasy season long team when you have to start them every single week because they
right.
do
it's
get
impossible.
You the
one.
Yeah.
So the guys that you can look at this year that I think are the younger players that are going to fall into that category. I like Robert Foster on Buffalo. Him and John Brown, we talked about it in the last podcast, that it's a really nice strategy to draft both of them in the 11th and 13th round or wherever you need to take them.
We talked about this off air. I love that fucking combo. And I don't mind getting the third guy, Zay Jones, in there. And just basically that whole team's approach of just tossing bombs to wide receivers just nonstop. That's just an approach that really, really works well and is going to work well in best ball leagues. Like, it's just too good to pass up. It's too good.
So Tre'Quan Smith might fall into this category too. Year two, he is the clear number two wide receiver. Now, I know they spread the ball around a lot in New Orleans, but I think you don't need to pay a lot. He's a 13th round pick, Tre'Quan Smith. So I think he falls into that category that's a really nice receiver to have in best ball formats. In season long, it's going to drive you crazy. You're never going to know when to start. He's going to score a lot on your bench. But I think he falls into that late category when you're just stacking wide receivers at the end.
Yeah, I love that. I love that approach. Let me throw out some names here of some pseudo breakout wide receivers from last year and give me an idea of kind of where you're valuing some of these guys. And I'll throw a few names out here. And you can kind of go over all of them for me. You know, Calvin Ridley, rookie from last year, kind of came on inconsistent, but you know, he's, you know, pretty much the only game in town next to Julio Jones for the Falcons, new offensive coordinator, new staff in place, maybe a better offense. Tyler Boyd is another guy when A.J. Green went down who was pretty studly for a little bit. And even with A.J. Green, was kind of breaking out last year quite a bit. Mike Williams from the Chargers and D.D. Westbrook, who is a name I'm hearing a ton of just buzz about across the board. And give me some thoughts on that group.
Yeah, so take D.D. out of it because he's a little bit later. We'll talk about the Jaguars wide receiver core in a second. But all the other names that you just talked about, Boyd, Mike Williams, and Calvin Ridley, they're all grouped together. They're usually going in the same eight-pick cluster, and that's in the fifth round. So you're going to hate your draft starting when you're first getting the best ball. You're going to love your first two or three picks, and then you're going to be like, holy shit, what just happened to the draft board? It falls off the cliff, so to speak, in the fourth round. That's just because you're not used to seeing these players in the fifth round. I, now having done about a dozen best balls, I'm used to the players who go in the fourth, fifth, sixth round, so I'm okay with it. So I like Calvin Ridley a lot. I think that, you know, he's a little bit older for a rookie last year. I think he came into the league, he was 24 already, so he's going into his age 25 season. He's pretty much in his peak now. He's playing with a really good quarterback. He's on a good team. They added some two offensive linemen in the first round there. I think he's a really safe wide receiver too. He's going to have spiked weeks that just like he did last year. So I think Ridley is a really smart pick in the fifth round. Now, people are pushing back. There is resistance on Tyler Boyd, so you'll be able to get him in the late fifth round if you want him. I saw what you saw. I saw a guy that struggled his first 2 years in the NFL and then busted out in year three. Sure, A.J. Green was down for the count a little bit, but you need a good second receiver. I'm cool. I've been taking him a good amount in the sixth round. And then the other guy, Mike Williams, is probably going to be the most popular breakout candidate. Tyrell Williams signed with the Raiders. That was about 75, 80 targets gone. Now, I know Hunter Henry's coming back, but we haven't seen it from Hunter Henry yet. This is year three in the offense. He's 6'4". He was my number one wide receiver in that class over Corey Davis last year. I think Mike Williams is a solid bet to end up as a wide receiver one. I know Keenan Allen's there sucking up targets, but
does Mike Williams being there make you value Keenan Allen a little bit less? And are you taking Keenan Allen at all, or are you just kind of looking at the next guy when Keenan Allen sort of pops up as the next best guy? You're kind of like, you know, Evans is off the board. T.Y. Hilton is off the board. You're staring at Keenan Allen and Stephon Diggs. Like, are you just saying, nah, fuck Allen, I'm taking Diggs?
You asked a great question. I think that if you were designing a wide receiver core, you couldn't ask for anything better than the skill sets to pair Mike Williams, 6'4", big guy, red zone threat, with Keenan Allen, who's a elite route running skills. And he's not going to score a ton of touchdowns, but he's a PPR machine. So I think that those two skill sets don't interfere with each other. Mike Williams scored 10 touchdowns last year, which I think was like fifth best in the NFL on some ridiculously low number of targets. I think, I mean, if you have the target numbers there, was it like
I jumped away from five targets? Yeah, he had 66 targets.
66 targets, 10 touchdowns. 11 touchdowns. So that means like every three receptions, he caught a touchdown. Now, obviously, that is insane, but I don't see any reason why you can't use that as a high baseline. I mean, would it shock you of all if Mike Williams scored 14 touchdowns this year.
If they give him 100 target. I mean, the concern with Mike is, so, like, if you look at, I'm more concerned about Keenan Allen than I am Mike Williams. Keenan Allen had 136 targets last year. He did not put up massive numbers. Six touchdowns, 1,100 yards, close to 100 receptions on 136 targets. So that's a fairly high target number. Again, it's just below the most elite tier. The top guy got 170, right? And that whole elite tier is around 170. He was getting about 136, so he's in that second tier along the lines of probably your Michael Thomases of the world and that level, maybe a little bit lower. Like, let's see what Stephon Diggs got. Hang on. And he was out. Well, he was out for a game. He had 150 targets.
We talked about how important targets are, but some players may not need them as much. And Mike Williams, he's a lock to maybe double his yardage. He had about 600 yards or so last. I remember I was looking over his stats not too long ago. I think he's a 1,000-yard receiver and 10 touchdown guy. I mean, in the fifth round, I don't think there's a better player for a wide receiver you could take.
So
I mean,
let me throw this out there because I'm going to throw out some names that are going ahead of Mike Williams right now because I love this game, you know. These are guys that are ranked and going ahead of Mike Williams. And I want to know, because Mike Williams sounds great. He sounds like gold. Speculative, of course, because the speculation is they'll throw to him more than the 66 times they did last year. Now, Tyrell is gone. And
Hunter Henry's back.
But Hunter Henry, the tight end, I never worry that much about tight ends taking away targets from wide receivers. I just don't. I think it's a different position. But yes, Hunter Henry will be back, so they will have a legitimate tight end on that team. And Mike Williams kind of was playing a de facto tight end role. So that's the risk with him. But the reward was, what if he's actually a really good wide receiver and they start...
Yes. He was picked like 7th overall.
I know. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, I mean, his talent should be there. Yeah. So, Mike Williams or Dante Pettis?
Oh, dude, Dante Pettis. I mean, Dante Pettis doesn't belong in the first 8 rounds.
He's being ranked ahead of him at the moment. All right, feel pretty confident that I'll at least have somebody scoring for me, but obviously that kind of approach means waiting a long time before you start taking your tight ends. Anyway, let's wrap it up here. We've got an hour of early season best ball discussion. I love best ball leagues on draft. It's so fun. It's so easy. I know it sounds so cheesy, but for anybody who's into fantasy football leagues, this is the best. You get to practice your draft strategy. You get to sort of see who's going where. You get to see a whole bunch of teams come together. So by the time you're actually drafting your leagues against your buddies or your high-stakes leagues, you have so much practice that you pretty much know exactly what's coming. So I love this shit. If you want to get signed up for a best ball app and you haven't gotten one yet, go to www.draft.com and use promo code FFGeek. They give you free entry into a best ball league, a paid best ball league. They have a $1 million contest going on for $25 per entry. Sure, it's a long shot, but where the fuck else can you make $1 million possibly playing season-long style fantasy football? It's awesome. And the best part for me is I don't have to manage these teams, so I can play my daily fantasy without having to think about all of the normal things that go into season-long leagues. Obviously, I have a few that I do still, and I love playing season-long, but you know, if I'm concentrating on crushing contests on FanDuel and DraftKings all season long, you know, you just don't have that much time to manage, you know, 10 or 15 leagues or anything like that. So best ball is awesome. Again, go to draft.com, use promo code FFGeek when you sign up. You also get a free month of DFS Army membership when you do so. So that's going to wrap it up for the Bold Calls podcast. Thank you for coming on, Season Long Says. And for everybody, we will be back breaking down the various positions, just covering everything season-long fantasy football. We got your back in DFS Army. I will have rankings posted at some point in the month of June and updated through the summer season and well and into season-long draft season. So look forward to all of that. And as always, if you are a DFS Army VIP member listening to this, spark up that conversation in my channel, in our team Slack forums, and we can chat about season-long strategies, approaches, best ball leagues, all that good shit. So, very good. We'll see you next time. Good luck, everyone.